This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Jussie Smollett is a Black gay man who plays a Black gay man in the Fox series Empire. In the early hours of Tuesday, he says he was attacked on the street in Chicago by two men who yelled racist and homophobic slurs at him. He also said that his attackers wrapped a rope around his neck. Chicago police are investigating the attack as a hate crime, and others have already moved to define it. Senators Cory Booker and Kamala Harris have both called the alleged attack on Smollett a, quote, attempted modern-day lynching. According to the most recent nationwide data from the FBI, reported hate crimes increased 17% in 2017 from the year before. And when an attack happens, entire communities are affected. To talk about that impact, I'm joined by Tobin Lowe, co-host of the podcast Nancy, which tells stories of the queer experience today, and Rebecca Carroll, cultural critic and editor of Special Projects at WNYC. Welcome, both of you.
Hello.
Thanks, Tanzina.
So I want to start by asking your reactions, and I know, Rebecca, you reacted in writing to hearing about this story of Jussie Smollett. What was your initial feeling in that moment when you heard the story?
I felt so tense. I felt immediately a visceral response and started to sweat and felt so sad and triggered, you know, and immediately started writing. And I didn't even think it was going to be a piece. I just needed to get some words down because it was the rope. It was the rope that really put me over, you know. I mean, Black and brown folks, LGBTQ folks, we hear and see the slurs. We see them online. We hear them on the street. But the rope, to just imagine that, that sort of the tactileness of it, just devastating.
Hmm. Tobin, you?
I think for me, and I think for a lot of queer people, hearing about attacks like this, you start to roll through the Rolodex of experiences that you've had and, you know, times that someone has called you a name, maybe on the train or on the street, and you're like, well, it could have gone another way. You know, like it could have gone violent, or maybe you have had violent experiences in the past. I mean, I think for me, the other thing that I think about is as queer people, we can't not center the fact that Jussie is Black and queer, and that he exists in that specific intersection, and that part of our community experiences so much more harassment. So that's the part that I feel drawn to focus on and to talk about.
Rebecca, you mentioned the rope, and just so you know, we reached out to the Chicago Police Department to learn more about how they're investigating this. We haven't heard back from them yet, but the rope. It's deeply and profoundly painful, and it just reminds me of not just lynchings of Black Americans, but also Matthew Shepard was tied with a rope. We just made lynching illegal in the United States after 200 failed attempts. The rope is significant.
Oh, extremely so. I mean, it's indelible. It is, and it is, you know, I certainly... At the beginning, when we first heard the story, when the news broke, I tweeted certainly about the intersection of it being both homophobic and racist, and then sort of went more into this notion because of the noose and the rope, and because that is such a, you know, implacable part of Black history, slave history. It's in my bones. It's in our bones collectively as Black folks, and so. That, I think, is something that we can't avoid talking about as well, and very specifically and very trenchantly.
This story is deeply uncomfortable for me. I think it triggers, and that word is used a lot, but right, I think this story in particular is really hard to process. Tobin, what is the sort of balance between being out and proud of who you are, and being afraid to be out and proud of who you are, not just because of being queer, but also being a person of color? Like, how do you deal with all of those levels? Do you choose, you know, not to be out and proud because you're afraid of what you can control versus what you can't control?
Yeah, it is tricky because it does feel like it is a potentially dangerous thing to be an out and public person right now. And I think you know, this is something I've talked a lot about with other queer folks, is this idea that, like, when we talk about queer people who are out there, so often we focus on stories of people who are fabulous and really confident and, like, have it all together. And so that forces us to focus on stories where people, you know, are sort of, like, really putting themselves out there and feel really confident. And I think what that doesn't leave as much room for is vulnerability or talking about some of the dangers of being out and proud. So, I mean, stories like this make me think about, you know, there's another side to that.
Similarly, you know, Who Runs the World? Girls, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that does not allow for a very real vulnerability for Black girls. I mean, we've just gone through this with R. Kelly. You know, Black girls don't really actually matter to a lot of American society and mainstream. So there's this overcompensation, you know, where Beyonce and Black Girl Magic and all this kind of thing. And I worry that it really puts our girls more in danger because there isn't as much conversation about how to create that bridge and how to be confident and step into who you are, but to also be very aware and mindful that there are forces actively working against you.
Mm. And there's also, you know, one of the things, we talked a lot about these emotions. One of the emotions I'm having is anger. I don't know if you guys are feeling the same thing, but the reason why I'm feeling that anger is because it makes me angry that I have to be afraid.
Yeah, I didn't feel, you know, I mean, I felt rage, which I don't know if it's that's really the same thing as anger. I felt rage and I just felt deeply, deeply saddened. I mean, I just could not get the image out of my head of this man who is by all accounts an absolute ray of light, full of love, his colleagues, his fans, his peers, you know, that he's in this moment alone with a rope around his neck. It's just so, so deeply saddening.
What about the trauma? Because I think when we talk about trauma, we don't quite understand it as a community issue, right? We think about it as an individual thing. You went through something, you're suffering through it, it's your trauma. But I think these attacks do affect the rest of our community, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
I absolutely think that the trauma is collective, and I think that it's observed and absorbed in individual ways, but also in collective ways. And I think it's an opportunity too, as Tobin pointed out, for it to be even more inclusively absorbed,
you know? Yes. I mean, even as we sit here, you know, there's different pieces that are triggering for each of us. You know, like Rebecca, you're talking about the lynching aspect of it. You feel it in your soul. And, you know, the homophobic part of it is the thing that, you know, I think about. And, you know, as people of color, we're all sitting here thinking about it. And so it puts us in a room together where we're each talking about our trauma and trying to understand each other's trauma. But I mean, the feeling that I had afterwards is like, oh my God, take your pick of awful things about this attack. There's sort of like too much to focus on and too much to pull apart.
How do we deal with collective trauma? How do we, like, how do traumatized people help each other get out of this or find ways to cope? Because I think one of the things about this is it sort of creates a low-grade or high-grade stress in all of us, right? We're afraid that we may be attacked. We're afraid to say the wrong thing. We're afraid of just living our lives. Like, how do we deal with that in everyday life?
I was really heartened by the sort of solidarity, the national solidarity that it came in response to this, you know, certainly from high profile folks, Kamala, and the Hollywood community. But also, you know, folks online and social media and Twitter, you know, who aren't as well known, who are struggling with understanding whether or not there needs to be an emphasis on one thing or the other, but are struggling nonetheless. And so I feel like that's, like, you know, Tobin said, take your pick. It's also an absolute resolute example of America embodied in this one incident.
I was going to say also, we talked about the news, but like you said, there are other elements to this that make this almost a textbook moment here for this moment that we're living through. Let's talk a little bit about the language that both was used in, that the police are using. I think that was a point of contention, calling this a possible hate crime. Question, though, if the crime is being investigated, right, the cops can't come out and say it was this. So how do they... How do we deal with that language?
I don't know the legalities around that for the police, but I do know that when a perpetrator, an assailant, is actually spewing hate while they are committing the crime, it's a hate crime. And so, it begs the question, certainly for those of us in journalism, how to report it. But I think that you have to say it's hate when it's hate.
Yeah. And I mean, I think regardless of the language, you can't erase that reporting on it and talking about it is trauma or brings up people's trauma. That's inescapable. My hope is that for other, POC, other queer folks, when we have these conversations, that we allow ourselves to soften into vulnerability. I think that there is a lot of pressure to always be right or to always feel like you have the answers. And actually creating space to learn from each other, I think, is so important in moments like this.
And I think also that to find the strength in that vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, we can be soft for a little bit?
Yes.
And on that note, Rebecca Carroll is cultural critic and editor of special projects at WNYC, and Tobin Lowe is co-host of the podcast Nancy. Thanks to you both for talking with me about this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we've been hearing your reactions to this act of violence.
My name is Mary. I live in suburban Philadelphia. I'm 64 years old, and I vividly recall my mother telling me stories about Hitler's rise to power. I've never been scared before like I am now. I'm pretty brave.
Hi, this is Helen. I'm so upset what's happening in Chicago, and myself also, I'm scared. I don't know what will happen for me and for my family.
Hi, this is Lisa. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. As a Jewish woman whose great-great-grandparent and aunt and child, their daughter, was killed in the Holocaust, and just as an American, just as a human, this hate, it's always going to be there, but our leadership has got to take a stand.
For many of you, this attack felt deeply personal.
My name is Sam. I'm from Portland. The attack really spoke to me as a queer person. Every day that we live out and proud in our communities, wearing bright, colorful clothing, we put ourselves in danger of those who want to erase us. People die in queer communities every day because of hate, and especially recently with the president allowing hate speech within his own party and within his own constituents to run rampant.
Hello, my name is Phoenix. I'm calling from Denver, Colorado, and I'm not fearful of my safety more so than I am my young black son's safety and black men, period. I'm more fearful of their safety because they are under constant attack by individuals who are afraid of them for their greatness. They have no other reason to be afraid of them other than that.
Hi, my name is Jen. As the mother of a child who identifies as bisexual and gender fluid, my reaction is, God help you if you lay a finger on my daughter.
Hi, this is Amisha from Denton, Texas. I'm currently thinking of ways in which I, as an African-American female, could maybe just move out of America, maybe give it a break for a while, maybe leave permanently.
We had an outpouring of responses to this story, and we really appreciate you weighing in. Stay with us.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.